This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Time to head out to the Rood guest hotline. Rood, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. We say good morning to Mike Rizzo, president and general manager of the Washington Nationals, presented by Main Street Bank. Cheer local. Bank local. Put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. Mike, hello.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We're not doing as well as Mitchell Parker was on the bump last night. I mean, what an awesome outing by him. 8 innings pitched, allows just 1 hit, 2 walks, fans, 4 Orioles batters. His ERA is at a sparkling 1.39. I mean, were you just blown away by what he was doing last night on the mound?
Yeah, he's been a very consistent pitcher for us the last year and a half since we brought him up. And, he had everything working last night. He was pounding the strike zone and kept the batters off balance and, kept the ball off the barrel of the bat. And that's the secret to his success.
What's his background? Did he play college ball? Did you guys draft him right out of high school?
San Jacinto, it looks like. Junior college.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah, he's a New Mexico kid that we drafted out of junior college in San Jacinto in the 5th round, which was that year. Remember, that was the last round in that draft because of COVID. We took him in the 5th round, and, development did a great job of him, Sammy Nairn and those guys down in the minor leagues. Because he was a guy that had a really good arm, but scattered his fastball and didn't pitch with much command or feel because he was pretty raw off the mound. So those guys did a great job with him in the minor leagues, and to his credit, he just worked really hard to harness his stuff and throw strikes, which is his key and to his success. And he pounds the strike zone with four quality pitches and lets the defense work behind him. He doesn't go into too many deep counts, and he's been very efficient with his pitch counts, which allows him to get deeper into games.
Yeah, I was going to say, you rarely see guys go 8 innings anymore. I mean, going 8 innings, I mean, usually guys go 6. So for a guy to throw less than 100 pitches and go 8, man, he was on point last night.
Yeah, he was really showing up the zone for sure.
And Mike, in your scouting career, how many of the 50 United States have you visited on scouting trips?
I would think all of them. I haven't made a map of it, but I would imagine, in 25 years as a scout, and then kind of doing it as an executive, I've probably been to every place they play baseball in the world. I've probably been to. My wife gets on me a little bit because Europe and those type of things, not so much, but Guatemala and Colombia, yes, many times. So
you've been to Alaska on a scouting trip?
Oh yeah, oh yes. That Alaska Summer League was back in the day was a very important place to scout college players in the summer. So we've done that. I've been to Australia several times. Obviously, Japan, Korea, Taiwan. All the Latin American countries, obviously, and except for Cuba. I've never been to Cuba.
So last night, the Orioles starting pitching has been really bad so far this year. I mean, they've had some injuries, but their starting pitching is worse than the league. And you guys took advantage of it. Your top 4 hitters, I believe, had 9 hits, including 3 up top with Woody and on bobblehead night. So I was texting his dad. They kept showing his dad on camera on on Masson. But talk about James Wood. Talk about Garcia's really good. Ruiz was on point last night.
Dylan Cruz on a heater.
Dylan Cruz hitting a bomb. So you guys were swinging the bats really good last night.
Yeah, good plan of attack against Kramer, and we got balls in the zone and didn't chase many pitches, which is kind of has been our Achilles heel. When we're bad offensively, we chase out of the zone too much, and we got balls in the zone and barreled them up last night. It was a good plan of attack, and Lowe got us going. He got a hanging slider and deposited him in the outfield, and Wood has been great for us, obviously. Lowe's been contributing, consistently for us. Starting to get Cruz on track, and his last eight or so games has been what we think he should be. And he's been a slow starter. Every rung in the minor leagues, he starts slow and kind of figures out a league and does well. So I think that we're all very hopeful that this is just another part of his development, where start a little slow, start and get a feel for it. If pitchers made an adjustment to him, he's starting to make adjustments to them. And they did a few mechanical tweaks with his swing, got him a little bit more upright, and I think he feels a lot better in the box. And they're getting go-glove defense from him in center and in right, and he's a great base runner, and he's just a good baseball player. So right. Excited to see him. Tana came up, and he's going to get an opportunity to play against some right-handed pitching, and took advantage of that and got a couple of hits to the opposite field, and we played good defense, and threw strikes, played good defense, and got some big hits and some tack-on runs, which is important against a good team to tack on, and we did that.
Mike, you mentioned Cruz's base running. Pretty impressive. He leads the Nats right now with 6 stolen bases, despite his on-base percentage being relatively low. So that has to be something that's encouraging.
Yeah, he's a really cerebral player. He knows how to play the game. He steals bases, but he's a great base runner. He's a good base stealer and a great base runner. He's the guy that goes first to third and second to home easily, and really doesn't he's one of our guys that really doesn't need coaching on the bases, because he's such a smart heads up base runner. So he's just a good baseball player all around, and a guy that we're just seeing him scratch the surface of what he can be.
Now, Riz, I know you've been around for everything. I mean, you've seen every possible scenario in every game. But I wanted to ask you, just going back to the series in Denver and Colorado, in the first game, of course, the first game was snowed out, which is kind of nuts. But the first game of the doubleheader, or I'm sorry, it wasn't a doubleheader on Sunday, but the first game of the series on Saturday.
12-11 game?
Yeah. How are you feeling up 12-2 in the seventh? Go to the bottom of the seventh. You start bringing in some relievers. How are you feeling watching that seventh inning? I bet you're banging your head against the wall.
I've been there before. We went through it in 17 and in 15. So we've been through it before. And when you get a bullpen of new guys and trying to figure out roles and leverage situations and that type of thing, it's the early returns sometimes are ugly, and the key for us is in the bullpen is, you got to throw the ball over the plate. It's that simple. This is the major leagues. If you can't throw two pitches, over the plate, and Bob Boone used to always tell me, he goes, if you can't hit a pizza pan with two pitches, you don't belong in the big leagues. And I think that, it goes deep into, what we're trying to do here is, you can see Cole Henry comes in the game, pounds the strike zone, gets two quick outs and extinguishes, a situation. So, throw the ball over the plate, pound the zone, trust your stuff. And if you belong in the big leagues, you'll have success and get guys out. So, those games are, they're closer than they should be, and it forces David to go to, his leverage relievers when you should not have to use your leverage relievers, for the games that are following. We got a doubleheader the next day. So, every man is important. Even though you're not pitching leverage situations or that type of thing, you have a job to do. And, what we say is, everybody's a closer. You close the inning you're supposed to pitch, and you know that's the secret. And we just have to find a way. You know, guys' stuff is fine. You know, you look at the radar gun, the velocity is there, the pitch shape is there, and that type of thing. Is you have to trust the stuff to get it, to throw it over the plate and get guys out.
Right. Hmm. Hey, I wanted to ask you about McKenzie because. And I know you and I talked a lot last year about this, but I mean, his numbers are really, really good in my opinion so far. He's had two 13K starts. He's got 45 strikeouts and 29 innings pitched.
We
right
started
now.
Out on fire last year,
yeah.
If I remember correctly.
He's only had one really bad start, really dicey start, and that was the game in Miami where he just got hit up a little bit. But in all of these other starts, he's not walking guys. He's striking out guys. He's keeping you guys in games. He's beat some good teams, beat the Dodgers. So talk about McKenzie in particular as compared to last year. Because I know last year you said, you know what, he just has to throw strikes. He was walking too many guys last year. His velocity was good. But talk about what you think he worked on in the offseason. Is it a confidence thing or did he work on something where he's just adjusted to it?
I think there's no lack of confidence with McKenzie Gore. He, okay. You know, he's got electric stuff. He knows he's got electric stuff. You know, he thinks he's pretty damn good, which he is. And I think it's a case of when your stuff is that good, you know, he's got elite, rotation on his breaking pitches. He's got a elite movement to a very good fastball and, his development of a good changeup is there. He's extremely athletic on the mound. All those things, you know, point to, you know, being an elite starting pitcher. And what takes you from a good starting pitcher to an elite starting pitcher is, you know, figuring out how to stay into the game, into the seventh inning. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, you have to be efficient with your pitches. And, you know, Max Scherzer used to tell me his goal, his goal was always to finish the inning with 15 pitches or less. Mm-hmm. And that's a goal that McKenzie has to have to, you know, the next step in his development is to take that elite stuff. He likes to strike out guys. He's got strikeout stuff and take that stuff into the seventh inning with him. And once he does that, then he ascends to, you know, being this, you know, elite stuff guy to the guy who, you know, who is an elite, you know, major league starter.
Right.
And I think that's what you're seeing with his evolution.
You want to give us an update on CJ?
Yeah, CJ played last night, six innings, I believe. He was 0 for 1 with two walks. He played shortstop,
okay.
Got a couple of balls there, and he'll play there tonight also. And then we'll probably make a decision and see how he feels. If he feels he needs another game or two to be on his feet, then we'll adjust from there. But he's close to being back with us.
All right, we'll get him back soon.
And we need him. That'd be great.
Oh yeah, absolutely. All right, man.
Mike, thanks as always, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
Pleasure, fellas.
Yep. Thank you, buddy. That's Mike Rizzo, president and GM of the Washington Nationals, presented by Main Street Bank. Cheer local, bank local, put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. When we come back, we'll get into EB's entertainment page.
So over the weekend, again, while many of you were stuffing your face with the NBA playoffs, your boy was watching largely. I dropped in and out of the NBA playoffs. I was watching a lot of the Stanley Cup playoffs, a lot of WrestleMania, and large chunks of the Colorado Rockies and the National Series, and then a bunch of other stuff. I watched a bunch of the DC Defenders yesterday as well. I can't watch one thing and only one thing. I just kind of bounce around. Sometimes I leave it on, sometimes I don't. So I'm all over the place. It's kind of hit and miss. Sometimes I see things like, for instance, the Nationals were up, I think, 9-2 on Saturday afternoon. I went click, and I started watching the NBA playoffs and the Stanley Cup playoffs because it was like 6 o'clock. And the Jets-Blues game came on, and I think the Knicks-Pistons game. And I was like, it's 9-2. And then I forgot that it was Coors Field. And the next thing I know, I look at the box score, and the Nationals had hung on for dear life and won 12-11. And, you know, that's just the way that ballpark goes. No lead is safe, and I should have known that, and I did a terrible job flipping back. I did a terrible job. And then yesterday, after 12-11 Saturday, and with the weather just a little bit warmer yesterday in Denver, the Nationals split a doubleheader, don't get an extra base hit in all 18 innings. Imagine that. You play two games in a day. Granted, that's not easy sledding. 18 innings in the span of, what, 7 or 8 hours? And you get no extra base hits. None. Weird, right? And yet they won one of the games. And the other game, they had their chances last night. Now they come back home. They flew back overnight. Take on the Orioles, who are struggling themselves, who got bombarded yesterday. I think it was 24-2 to the Reds. The Reds are still scoring runs. So that'll be tomorrow night, Battle of the Beltways, all that good stuff. And we'll see. We'll see where we go from there. But a couple of good things emerged and that I kind of wanted to sort of focus on to start out of the show. Listen, we're going to have Greg Wyshynski on from ESPN. He is, of course, a long, long, long time NHL media analyst, reporter, writer for ESPN. Used to be a regular on this station way back in the heyday of ESPN 980. I remember old Chuck Sapienza hired him to be our NHL insider, I think in 2013 or 2014 or whatever it was. So Greg Wyshynski is on because there's a lot of people not picking the Capitals. There are a lot of people not picking the Capitals. So we'll talk about all of that. We'll do the entire 2 o'clock hour on the Caps. And maybe more. Because you got a interesting situation at goaltender. And game one is tonight, 7 o'clock. I'll be there for the Eastern Conference quarterfinals between the Montreal Canadiens and the Washington Capitals. If you're going to the game, if you're excited about the game, obviously we'll be talking all about it starting in the 2 o'clock hour. This hour will be a little mishmash, if you will, because we have so much going on. We will get to some NBA playoffs. We will get to WrestleMania. John Cena on top of the world for a 17th time. I spent way too much of my weekend listening, having it on in the background, tweeting about it on my ulterior Twitter account with Matty Ice, at Roost and Rook. I was tweeting away, tagging everything, so that hopefully we could be seen, hopefully we could be found. I don't know if any of it worked, but, you know, it was a big weekend for us wrestling nerds. We had Byron Saxton on for 25 minutes on Friday from Vegas. Burke, Virginia native. Great spot. Great dude. He's a big Commanders fan. So we had a lot to talk about. So watched a lot of wrestling. Again, I'm not sitting there with a notebook or anything like that. I'm not sitting there with a compass and grading every move and all that. I'm not doing that. I'll let the nerds do that. I mean, I'm here for the big picture. I'm here for the big moments. And so, you know, again, my weekend was kind of split. I watched the Nationals a lot. I watched a lot of wrestling. I watched very little of the NBA playoffs, some, but not a lot. I watched a bunch of Stanley Cup playoffs, but not even as much as I wanted to. And now, starting tonight, we go into lockdown mode. It's Stanley Cup playoffs, and that's what I care most about. And then the NFL draft, of course, this weekend, and we will touch on that all throughout the 3 o'clock hour. And then we will have coverage throughout the week, and we'll have some interesting questions, and we'll have some guests. Tomorrow, Jay Paterno will join us. Not Joe Paterno. No, Jay Paterno, his son. A college football analyst, author, everything. We had him on during the college football playoff. He was great. Jay Paterno will join us on Abdul Carter, on the tight end coming out of Penn State. And the rest of the NFL draft. We'll have special draft coverage Thursday night, Linnell and Denton Day. We'll be holding down the fort here on the Team 980 during round one of the NFL draft. And again, the Capitals, again, get underway tonight. They play Wednesday night, Friday night, Sunday night, so every other night. Let's go back to the Nats. So again, they take 2 out of 3 from Colorado. Colorado was awful coming in. They were largely awful during the series, if we're being honest. Colorado's not a good team. Their record tells us that, and your eyes tell you that, or should tell you that. Colorado made a ton of defensive mistakes this weekend. And the Nationals often capitalized. Often. Not all the time, but often capitalized. And capitalized enough where you felt, all right, pretty good about the weekend after losing 3 of 4 in Pittsburgh, after being shut down and stymied offensively, especially Thursday, but really much of the series. And you said, all right, we know it's a bandbox. They're a terrible defensive team. They do not help out their pitching staff at all. This is a series that, you know, arguably, if you're good, and nobody's saying that the Nationals are good, but if you're good, if this is the year that you truly turn it around, you probably sweep that series. They did not, but they did take 2 out of 3. So I suppose that's a positive after 2 lost series in Miami and in Pittsburgh. So you take 2 out of 3 and you feel a little bit better about yourself. 10-game road trip doesn't go exactly your way, but it wasn't an embarrassment. It wasn't a humiliation of any sort. And you still very much have your opportunities coming up here with, again, the Orioles coming into town scuffling a little bit at 9-12 after yesterday's debacle. And with the Mets coming in to town over the weekend. So you have a chance. Again, the Mets are good, but you have a chance. The Mets have been the Mets, from what I've seen, I mean, they've been pulling some magic rabbits out of their tuckuses. So not impossible. Not impossible. But the Nationals, again, did a pretty decent job over the weekend. Again, I would have loved for them to have gotten a big clutch base hit last night. They did not. They did not come up with it. And they lost 3-1 in the nightcap of the doubleheader. You got a pretty decent start out of Brad Lord. Not bad. Again, they just couldn't get the big base hit. And when you play 2 games at Coors Field, granted, in the same day, and you don't get any extra base hits, which I didn't even realize until Mark Zuckerman put up that number, it's hard to fathom. It's hard to fathom. It's hard to do that. Which shows you that they've still got a lot of growing to do. Now, the best thing that came out of this weekend, the best thing, was Dylan Cruz, right? Because Dylan Cruz finally got going. Now, last night in the nightcap, again, he was only 1 of 4. But I loved what I saw. I guess it was in the ninth inning. I think it was in the ninth inning. Maybe it was the eighth. I can't remember. Where Dylan Cruz went down almost to a complete knee and got one and drove it for a base hit. Just a base hit. We'll get to the other stuff that he did during the series. It was in the ninth inning last night. And he just went down to like almost one complete knee because the pitch was sinking and he made tremendous contact with it. Just hit it flush. And it was one of those swings and one of those approaches that you go, oh, okay, I see what everybody else sees. Because it's been a struggle for him offensively, right? Last year, when he came up, didn't exactly go great. This year so far, hasn't gone great. Well, Coors Field woke him up. Hit a couple of home runs on Saturday, both to the opposite field, right? Which is easier to do at Coors Field, but not easy to do when the weather is as cold as it was. Remember, they had a blizzard on Friday. Now, they didn't have a blizzard Saturday and Sunday, but it was still cold. It's still not easy, even in that bandbox. But Dylan Cruz was the best thing by far that came out of this weekend. And it's not, again, just because of the home run he hit. He also made a great defensive play. The Nationals themselves made a couple of really sparkling defensive plays yesterday. One by Jacob Young. One by Nassim Nunez in the deep shortstop hole where he kind of came out of nowhere. That was probably the second best thing that came out of the weekend, right? While the Rockies were busy kicking the can around and making mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake and allowing the Nationals to capitalize, which, good job by the Nationals. The Nationals' defense was not perfect, but pretty darn good overall. And that's how this team is going to win. They're not always going to bop and mash. And we saw that yesterday. They're going to have to win by running the bases smartly, which they don't always do. They're going to have to win by playing great defense, which they don't always do. But they are better equipped this year. They're going to have to win
by getting better out of the bullpen. The bullpen sucks. The bullpen sucks.
Yes. Wait, did I just say that the bullpen sucks? Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Now, yesterday, it wasn't that bad in the nightcap, and even in the first game. Poche gave them a scoreless inning with two strikeouts. Jackson Rutledge gave them two innings, did walk two, struck out three, only allowed one hit. Salazar did allow a run in one-third of an inning. All right. And Jorge Lopez, again, appealing, got the suspension reduced down to two, so I don't know when he starts serving that two-thirds scoreless. But their ERAs, just for the guys that pitched in the nightcap last night, 15.88 for Poche, 3.86 now for Jackson Rutledge, which is great, especially compared to this bullpen, 8.31 for Salazar, and 9.72 for Lopez. I mean, their bullpen sucks. They're going to have to play great defense consistently. They're going to have to be great on the base paths, which they're aggressive, and they're not always good. They're not always sharp, and they're going to have to get more consistency out of the lineup because we saw it in this road trip, right? You know, again, you break out the big bats on Saturday after a day off because of the blizzard. James Wood goes opposite. Dylan Cruz goes opposite field twice. I think they hit four home runs total. And then they do diddly poo yesterday. So this is the sign, of course, of a young team that is still trying to find its way. At least they won one of the two yesterday. They got a great start from Jake Irvin. That was good. That was positive. Again, really good defense overall while the Rockies were busy making three errors. So at least they took two out of three. You would have liked them to get the sweep. At least they took two out of three. And again, you don't know if it's Coors Field yet, but Dylan Cruz is now alive. And it was not just the home runs. It was what he did in the ninth inning last night. Go back and watch that at bat if you get a chance. You'll see exactly what I'm talking about. All right, so opening up with the Nats, we'll get to the NBA playoffs. We'll get to WrestleMania and a full Caps preview in the 2 o'clock hour and the NFL draft. So much to do. You can join us, 301-230-0980, after I go yell at Linnell Willingham for a couple of minutes during the commercial break. Oh, wait a second. He just walked in. I got to start yelling at him now. What are you doing here?
Voice of the Nats here on the Fan with Charlie Slows is our guy, Dave Jagler. Jags, 7-0 win, out hitting Baltimore 14-1 last night. A lot to like. I want to start with Dylan Cruz. Three home runs in four games. His expected batting average is now up over .280. I'd say he's right where he needs to be at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing is, Grant, is he had no panic when his batting average started with a zero, and even when it started with a one, I mean, you could still see the process was good. And, you know, he had some tough luck. I mean, he had that one stretch in the first week of the season where he struck out eight at bats in a row, but that's a thing of the past. And he's been hitting some hard contact. And, you know, in Colorado, Mickey Moniak made a diving catch and took away a two-run triple. You felt that he hit some balls hard right at people. And when he hit the two home runs to right center field in consecutive at bats, you're like, okay, I think he's about to take off here. And yesterday hit a home run to the pole side. So everything seems to be going well for him. And you know, even when he was struggling, he was still giving you good defense. And when he was on base, he was a factor. His legs helped steal a run in the Rockies series. So a pretty good, you know, pretty good sign of maturity to be able to shake off a rough start. Because if you have this kind of stretch, you know, 40, 50 at-bats in the middle of the season, not as big a deal. But when it's the first 50 at-bats of the season and you're hitting 100, it's on the scoreboard for everyone to see and their questions being asked. But he stayed within himself, and I think you're starting to see him come out of it very well.
Jags, Mitchell Parker last night, eight innings, one hit. If I'd have known that little measly opposite field single from Cedric Mullins was going to be it, I mean, my goodness gracious, 17 in a row to end the game. He's not striking out a ton of guys. So kind of how's he doing it at this point, mixing those pitches, huh?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, there's more than one way to get guys out. I mean, obviously the strikeout is the sexy way to do it. But, you know, if you can get outs with weak contact, and he's not a ground ball pitcher, he's going to pitch up in the zone. So that's a thin margin for error. If you're not quite up in the zone enough, then those balls are going to be hit for extra base hits. But when he's right, you know, something about his delivery and just a little bit of finish on the fastball makes it play a little higher than the 93 or 94 you might pop on a radar gun. But you saw a whole lot of just weak contact and pop-ups against Parker. And so it's a different style of pitching. I mean, you know, guys who have some deception and some life up in the zone can be successful. The key is to stay there. And if you're going to miss up and out of the zone rather than miss down in the center of the hitting zone. And that's when he'll get in trouble. But so far, you know, his misses when he was out of the zone were up and out of the zone. All right, a couple of walks, pitch around those. The other thing that he's doing very well, Danny, in all of his starts this year is he's not panicked with men on base. He's made and seemed to be at his best when there are runners on base, and he's limited damage.
Jags, I've thoroughly enjoyed the top two spots in the order pretty often here when it's been James Wood and Nathaniel Lowe of late. Wood, who had three hits, two extra base hits last night, and then Nathaniel Lowe with the two-run homer in the first, who's got the team lead, 19 runs batted in. Those are the two guys with OPSs up over 870. Is that something that might stick here?
I think it's going to change when C.J. Abrams comes back. I mean, C.J. played his second game earlier today for Harrisburg, so I've got to think by this weekend against the Mets, or maybe even as soon as tomorrow, who knows, we'll see C.J. in the lineup. So I would assume that C.J. would go back to the top spot for the most part, but then maybe it's Wood 2 and Low 3, although against certain pitchers you're not going to stack the three lefties in a row. But yeah, I mean, it's a good deal to have your top two, you know, OPS guys or run producers at the top. And, you know, to me, there's so much on James Wood at a young age. You know, Wood didn't have a great doubleheader on Sunday, and the team struggled to score. You know, he had a three-hit game with four RBIs. Saturday, they score 12. Last night, he has two extra base hits and three hits. They score 7. When James Wood goes, this offense goes. So there's a lot on his shoulders, and he continues to produce, and we love to see it.
Jags, awesome as always, man. Have a great call tonight.
It could happen.
See you, my friend.
And by the way, James Wood last night, stop sleeping, people. We need to have a James Wood update on the show every day, sponsored by Don't Sleep. That's my whole bit on James Wood.
That people are sleeping?
They're just sleeping.
And maybe they're not.
And occasionally I'll get stuff from like Nats fans who are like, what do you mean we're sleeping? We know he's good. There's 16,000 people at games, and 8 of them have James Wood jerseys. You guys aren't doing it right. And I'm not being mean. I know I'm fan shamer, and everyone gets sad.
Yeah, what are you doing over there, guy?
For 3 years. Well, everyone should have a James Wood jersey and be at every game.
Now,
that's what I'm saying.
But you don't have a James Wood jersey because he's not an obscure fourth-line winger.
I don't do baseball jerseys. Very different.
There you go.
I do post-game shows and cover the Nationals.
That is true. That
I'm
is
not
true.
Allowed to wear a James Wood jersey.
That is true.
But it's very simple for me, Danny. He's a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
Act like it. He had a bobblehead night. That was a two-night bobblehead night. The first night, he had two doubles and three hits. The second night, he had a 430-foot home run, 116 miles an hour off the bat that hasn't landed yet.
Here's the 3-1. Swing a long drive, right field, way back it goes, and it'll come down in the second deck. Oh, what a blast for James Wood. And the Nationals lead it 1-0, 5 pitches in.
Pull side, by the way. That's right center.
Here's my impression of James Wood homering, right? He homers.
Yep.
And then I go, James Wood just homered. I'm so excited. And then a bunch of people go, is he going to play for the Mets or the Phillies in 5 years? Ugh.
I want to fight them in a cage until they tap out.
Don't fight anyone in a cage until they tap out.
Losers.
Don't.
God, it pisses me off. 6 years from now, something bad might happen. Let's all mope about it for a while. Grant's excited about something. Let's be weird about it. God, I hate that bit. I hate it so much. Every single time I tweet out a James Wood home run, every time. Yankees are cool. Yankees, they're seeing this too.
Future Yankee star.
And you know what? It's not even your guys' fault. It's the learner's fault. They've never kept anybody. They won't keep him. He's a Boris-advised player.
Mm-hmm.
But I shouldn't have to deal with it for 5 years. Like, this is the fun part. If you're lucky enough as a baseball fan, if you're lucky enough, your team will draft or trade for or develop a unicorn once every now and then. We happen to have been spoiled because we got Hapa, and then we got Soto, and now we got James Wood. And so I got one. It's like when I used to run around trying to catch a frog in my neighborhood. I would like catch a frog and I'd run home and it's peeing on me and everything. And I'd be like, I got one. I got one.
You got
one,
the frog.
I got
yeah,
one.
You got him.
And I put it in my aquarium, mm-hmm. right? I got one. And you guys are yucking my yum. You're trying to trip me. You're trying to knock it out of my hands. I caught a turtle on Bumpy Oak Road and you're trying to ruin it. Stop ruining it.
So who are you really mad at?
Anyone who...
Like, I know what you're saying. Like, it's a symptom. Are you mad at the symptom or mad at the root cause?
I'm mad at the symptom. Mm-hmm. The reality is the reality. Mm-hmm. I have terminal cancer. That's the reality. James Wood and every other great player will never sign here because I don't have ownership that spends any money. So that's a fact. The symptom is...
Yeah.
He homered today. He'll be gone in 2032. Stop it. Get it?
Yes, I do.
Yep. Why can't we might not be here in 7 years. I got fat. I'm sick of fatness, whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. Right now, I could go to the bowling alley. It would be like showing up when I'm at the bowling alley and be like, aren't you sick? Aren't you not going to be here in a while? You don't do that. Enjoy it while we got it.
I'm with you. We're feeding out of the same trough.
Yeah.
If you can't have any fun, then what's the point of any of it? Right? Like, I know it's going to end. I mean, I have a sliver of hope that it won't end, but I'm pretty sure this is not a pitcher that's got a private negotiation with the now deceased Ted Lerner, right? Where Boris and Ted can concoct a deal outside of the baseball operations for Steven Strasburg, you know? So other than that, nobody's going to re-sign here. And it might be some weird cursory effort where they offer a tenth of the market value and then get snippy when anybody
says
peep.
Here's the other thing. People are like, well, James Wood's from here. Maybe he'll want to stay here. I love James Wood. You won't find anyone that loves James Wood more than me. Maybe Kenny Wood. I don't know about that. That's his pops. Probably Paula Wood because moms have a special love
for
their kids.
Sure, yeah, mom's on you.
But I wouldn't even guarantee that. I love James Wood. He's my special boy. He's my sweet prince.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hire Scott Boris because you want to stay somewhere for 15 years. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
If you wanted to do that, there's a lot of agents out there you could do that with.
The stay-at-home agent, you can do that.
You probably want to get paid a little bit because mm-hmm. you know your value.
And he will.
And I don't have any problem with my nonchalant prince getting the bag, by the way. You should want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's called good old-fashioned American capitalism.
Yeah.
Go get paid, young man. But my point is just, if you were represented by someone else, I might think maybe there's a shot. See what I'm saying?
I do.
Doesn't matter. It's a lot of years away.
Yeah, I think it's a one-in-a-million moonshot that somehow it happens here. My point is, there are a lot of years between now and the end. If you can't enjoy those times, I will tell those people that are yucking your yum, there's no point to you paying attention at all.
Wait, why do anything?
There's no joy. If you can't find joy, what are you doing this for?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
By the way, it's not like it's a one-year contract. He's here for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what's going to be happening in 6 years? You and I won't have this job anymore. I don't know. I'll be in a different state working at a Best Buy somewhere. I don't know what you'll be doing.
Who knows what I'll be doing?
You'll be doing a stand-up show in Memphis. I don't know. 6 years is so far away.
Mm-hmm.
Your baby will be in kindergarten.
Yeah.
I mean, enough already with the whining about him not staying here. Just enjoy the home runs, people. Watch them and enjoy them.
It is a Wednesday afternoon in the nation's capital and beyond, and we are fired up to be here with you over the next 3 hours, along with AMAC on the other side of the glass. He has returned. And it is a big day in the nation's capital. You've got the Battle of the Beltways round two, ding, dang, dang, tonight. You've got the Capitals and the Canadiens tonight at Capital One Arena. And you've got the NFL draft now about 30 hours or so, 31 hours away, something like that, somewhere along those perimeters and ranges. So we got a lot to cover today. John Keim is going to join us from ESPN. We will talk to Cakesy. Try not to bother him very much, but we go way back. Been, you know, friends and colleagues with John since 2009. And somehow he hasn't gotten sick of me yet, which I'm sure he has at times, but he's nice enough to come on. So John Keim, the dean, if you will, of the Commander's beat, will join us at 3 o'clock. We will see about somebody else. Not sure if that will happen or not. Either way, we will be caller intensive, I guess, in the first 2 hours at 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980, and then we will not have as much time, if any time, in the 3 o'clock hour, so just keep that in mind. Be nice to AMAC when you call in. He's working hard and trying to take care of things and doing a good job for us, as always. And if you want to call in, just, you know, please make sure you have a little energy and a little pep in your step, man. It's a big day. It's a big week. And there's no shortage of things to be fired up about. So let's start with this. Obviously, again, we'll be NFL draft centric later on. Certainly we can get into it earlier, but I wanted, and we will be Caps centric, through the middle of the show. I wanted to start with this. How about the Nationals last night, right? Listen, I understand it's late April. I understand they just got their 10th win of the year. I got it. Got it. But, I mean, you have a local or geographical rivalry. You have a team that's made the playoffs the last 2 years in the Baltimore Orioles. And, oh, by the way, they've gotten swept in each of those 2 years. Granted, it's just a two-game sweep, so it's not like you're getting swept in three or four games. So that's kind of sucked for the Orioles, but I believe all four of those losses have happened at home, if I'm not mistaken, if memory serves. But the Orioles came in having given up 24 runs on Sunday. Both teams had a day off. The Nationals played a doubleheader in freezing Colorado, got home at 6, 7 o'clock in the morning Monday, so had a shortened day off, could have used every excuse in the book, and instead mollywopped the Orioles 7-0. I mean, they just bitch-slapped them all over the place. Excuse my French. 14 hits. The Orioles had 0 runs, hence the 7-0 score, and 1 hit. They had as many errors as they had hits, the Orioles. They had 1 more error than they had runs, 1-0. So a day, 2 days after, giving up 24 runs to not the Big Red Machine in Cincinnati, well, against Cincinnati in Baltimore, Mitchell Parker came out throwing darts. And the Nationals got all the offense they needed 2 batters into the game. James Wood led off with a double. And then, bam, Nathaniel Lowe with a 2-run home run. And the game, as we would ultimately find out, would be over at that point because the Orioles didn't even bother to show up. Now, listen. The Nationals are only 10-13, so let's pause. Got a lot of work to do. Nobody's saying that they've done anything at this point, but considering their rash of injuries, remember, they're playing without their entire left side of their infield, with DeJong still dealing with all sorts of swelling. They can't even, like, from what I gather on the broadcast last night. Charlie and Dave were talking about this. And by the way, the Nationals and the Orioles on Team 980 tonight and the Odyssey app. Why? Well, because of the Capitals and Canadians over on 106.7 The Fan, and they're both playing at the same time, where the Nats and Orioles start 15 minutes or so earlier. But tonight, Nats-Orioles Game 2 right here on the Team 980 after Craig. So, the Nats are playing without the left side of their infield in C.J. Abrams, who Mike Rizzo said today on the Junkies here on the Team 980. You can go back and listen to that on Rewind, on podcast, what have you, on the Odyssey app. I listened to it this morning while I was getting ready for work, and he said, look, he played last night in Rochester. He'll go again tonight. Then we'll reevaluate, and it's possible that he could be back up here for Thursday night or certainly Friday night for the start of the Mets series, depending on how he feels. So that's good. But Paul DeJong, I guess, still has so much swelling that they can't even really do an exam on him. So he's going to be gone for a little while. Remember, they have all sorts of pitching issues. The bullpen's been terrible. There's been injuries of Palooza, DJ Hurz, Josiah Gray. Hurz lost for the year definitively. Josiah Gray probably lost at least until late August, September 1st, something like that. And then Soroka made a rehab start. He's been lost since his first start of the year, which he lasted 4-plus innings in Toronto. Go figure, that guy got hurt. So the Nationals have had all sorts of injuries, and yet here they are at 10-13. You know, that's not bad. And they played a killer schedule out of the chute. Remember, they nearly swept the Dodgers, wound up taking 2 out of 3. They took 2 out of 3 from Arizona. All right, the Rockies suck. They took 2 out of 3 from them. Somehow they lost 2 out of 3 to the Marlins and 3 out of 4 to the Pirates. Not every series is going to go your way. But okay, last night they had every excuse in the world to come out dead, flat, rough around the edges. Every excuse in the world. The Orioles had gotten pounded 24-2 or whatever it was on Sunday. They didn't have to travel. They didn't have to play a doubleheader late Sunday night. They didn't get home at 7 in the morning. And yet the Nationals took an absolute hammer to them. An absolute hammer to them. So kudos to Davey Martinez's crew. Kudos to what the Nationals are trying to do here, which is, hey man, we got off to a bad start. Okay? Lost 2 out of 3 to the Phillies. Got swept in Toronto. Lost the first game of the Arizona series. They were 1-6. And everybody was like, another lost season. And this is why you don't judge things 7 games of a 162. And even last week, when they again lost 3 out of 4 in frigid, disgusting Pittsburgh, and 2 out of 3 in lonely old Miami. All right, disappointing. That sucks. Get back on the bike. And that's exactly what they did. They got blizzarded out on Friday. They damn near gagged thanks to their terrible-ass bullpen on Saturday, but they pounded out 12 runs. And then they split a doubleheader that they had a chance to win the second game in, and they won the first game. So they took 2 out of 3, granted, from a bad Colorado team. Again, got home 6-7 o'clock in the morning on Monday morning after a 10-day road trip. Not a 3-day road trip, a 10-day road trip. Had a day off, yes. But, again, it's not like a true day off when you're getting home 7, 8 o'clock in the morning after you get out of the airport and all that stuff. And granted, I know they travel luxuriously. I got it. But still, hey, man, give them some freaking credit. Right? And Dylan Cruz, who we talked about with Toby yesterday, who we talked about on Monday, even outside of the home runs, I kept telling you, go watch the at-bat that Dylan Cruz had in the ninth inning, game two, Sunday night, when most of you were not watching. I was watching. And Dylan Cruz went down to one knee and drove one with authority to right center field. And that's how I knew Dylan Cruz is freaking locked in. Dylan Cruz is locked in. And again, last night, another home run. And James Wood and Nathaniel Lowe with the home run, with the double and then the home run to start it. And then again, they kept adding to it. And all of a sudden, granted, it was a horrible start to the year. Remember, he didn't have a hit for more than a week. Dylan Cruz is inching closer to 200. He's at 189. Now, he's been hitting the ball way better than that. Even before this run, three home runs in four games. Again, it's not just the home runs. He's not a 25 to 30 home run hitter in all likelihood. He's probably an 18 to 24-ish home run hitter. I don't need him to hit three home runs in four games. I mean, it helps. It's great. I need him to drive the ball. I need him to hit the ball from right center to left center. I need him to hit it with authority. And that's exactly what Dylan Cruz is doing. Go to the opposite field last night, left center field, bing, bang, boom. The Nationals just kept adding. And Mitchell Parker, who would have thought that Mitchell Parker would be their best starter so far through the first month of the season? I mean, Mackenzie Gore is their most talented starter, and clearly he's got the best stuff. Mitchell Parker's their best pitcher so far through the first month of the season. And he was not bad at all as a rookie last year by any stretch. Eight innings last night, one hit, as we mentioned, only one hit for the Birds. No runs, two walks, four Ks, ERA 139. He's got four pitches. He locates, he gets ahead in counts, he puts guys away. He doesn't dilly-dally. He doesn't allow one bad at-bat to turn into a big inning. Last night, he walked Cedric Mullins to lead off the game. Boom. Settles down, gets out of it, no problem. Good start. And then they were able to mix and match with Cole Henry and Colin Poche and in a one-sided game. And Poche, I know he's got good stuff, but I mean, please, can you not walk two guys in one-third of an inning, please, with a 7-0 lead? Please throw strikes. Please throw strikes, for God's sakes. But the Nationals deserve a lot of credit, and that's why we lead off the show with them, because we didn't have a Caps game last night. Yes, the Commanders are going to pick 29th. Nobody knows who they're going to pick. Everybody thinks they know who they're going to pick. Nobody knows. The Caps obviously play tonight. We'll get into all of that, but the Nationals deserve some praise. Not only for a win, not because it's against a geographic rival, not because of anything stupid like the Masson deal or the app or anything, all the nonsense that you people throw around because nobody knows anything about baseball anymore. The Nationals deserve a win because they kicked the Orioles' ass when they could have laid down and allowed the Orioles to play pin the tail on the donkey. Because the Orioles should have been pissed. The Nats should have been still sleepy at the wheel. And just the opposite happened. Literally the opposite happened. In every way. So kudos to Davey Martinez, Mike Rizzo, and the Nationals. And always remember, there's more than one radio show around here that actually knows and talks about baseball. More than one. Okay? And it's this one. So kudos to the Nationals. We'll see what happens tonight. You want to hop in on that? 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980 on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. Now, we want to get into and mix it up with the Caps and the Canadians, Nats, Orioles, what have you. Basically, again, we'll save the NFL draft stuff for 2 and 3 o'clock as best we can control it. We might have a guest elsewhere along the way besides John Keim of ESPN, who will obviously talk all things Commanders and NFL draft. But if you're going to one of these two games tonight, clearly everybody loves the playoff atmosphere at Capital One Arena. But I'll be interested to see what the crowd is tonight at Nationals Park because, you know, again, it's game two of, I didn't realize they were doing this until last night, of a James Wood oversized bobblehead giveaway. I think they're doing first 10,000 fans each night. Interesting that they split that up. Very interesting. That's abnormal. I don't recall seeing that where you have one giveaway, the same giveaway, and you do it over two nights, and instead of doing first 20,000 fans, you do first 10,000 fans. And I don't know if that's because they weren't expecting 20,000, or if they're just trying to get a bigger gate. I don't know. Obviously, Orioles fans. You know, listen, the Orioles, again, have made the playoffs the last 2 years. My guy, the Birdman, who I love, longtime good friend of mine, he called the other day. He wants Brandon Hyde fired. Listen, how about the Orioles come up with a clue, pitching-wise? How about we not let Corbin Burns and Anthony Santander go in the same offseason? How about that? How about that? I mean, I know we want to blame the head coach and the manager for everything. How about that? And just the same for the Nationals. You know, you guys want to blame Davey Martinez for his bullpen management. I mean, it makes it a lot easier to manage your bullpen when your starting pitcher is not Mackenzie Goring it and barely getting to the sixth. When Mitchell Parker is as efficient as he was, and he gives you eight near-perfect innings. Makes it a lot easier to manage a bullpen, eh? But tonight, the crowd, again, I don't know why they split up the Wood bobblehead, all that, whatever their reasons are. Maybe it's, again, to just try and, you know, have an extra promotional date. I don't know. It was curious to me, but whatever. I don't care. I would like to see a pretty good crowd. Last night, they announced tickets sold. Again, that doesn't mean in the ballpark. 29,504. Now, the weather was pretty good last night. That helps. There was no caps last night. Certainly that helps. I wonder what it'll be tonight. I'm guessing it'll be less, again, because most people generally tend to be Caps fans and Nats fans, and if you're not going to the Caps game, maybe you want to watch the Caps game at home and you don't want to be at a baseball game. Again, I totally understand. But I'll be interested to see what the box score says tomorrow or what they announce tonight because, again, you have competition tonight that you didn't have last night. And, again, 29,000? Can't ask for much more than that at the end of April. Now, again, that is a giveaway, right? But at the end of April, where it's not always warm, and people don't know what the weather is going to be like, you know, that's not bad. Yeah, I don't know why they're doing the James Wood bobblehead two nights in a row. I really don't. Usually teams do not do that. Usually I don't recall the Nationals ever doing that, but they're doing it. And then you got the Mets rolling in here for a four-game series. And Juan Soto, of course. He's been back plenty of times, so that takes away a little bit of that. But the Mets, they are rocking and rolling at Citi Field. We'll see what they look like on the road. But that's going to be a really, really, really good test after two more with the Orioles. And you've got the Orioles for, again, another 6:45 game on Thursday, which, again, I would presume, being that the Commanders don't have a high pick in the draft, being that weather will probably be nice, no caps, you probably get a better crowd on Thursday night, much similar to Tuesday night. Maybe not as good because there's, you know, no James Wood giveaway, Minecraft something or other that they're doing. I know nothing about that. But we'll see. I want the Nationals to be really good at home because if you're really good at home and you play 500-ish on the road, good chance you're going to make the playoffs. Good chance you're going to make the playoffs. So last night, good start, great performance in every way, shape, or form. They deserve kudos. They played hard. They played clean. They played well. They had every right to lay down like a bunch of dogs. And instead, they kicked the Orioles in the teeth. So kudos to them. back in a flash on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. We'll start to get into the Caps and the Canadiens. Game 2 of that series coming up tonight, 7 o'clock at Capital One Arena. Again, don't forget, Nats Orioles here on the Team 980 at 6:15 pregame, 6:45 first pitch. Caps Canadiens over on the Fan. Puck drop just after 7 o'clock, and you can watch it, of course, on Monumental and ESPN on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. All right, before we get into the Caps and the Canadiens, and you could talk about the Nats, Orioles, Caps, Canadiens, and everything in between. We'll do NFL draft and Commanders and all that in the 2 o'clock hour. John Keim at 3 o'clock. And away we go on a Wednesday afternoon. I did want to bring up this. So I was on with J.P. Finley and B. Mitch right before the show. J.P. just came back from vacation. I was on with Toby and B. Mitch yesterday. On with J.P. and B. Mitch today. B. Mitch is probably so tired of me at this point. He's like, oh, no, not this loser again. But anyway, JP wrote me in, and somehow they start trying to kick my ass about television ratings and hockey ratings and all this stuff and making stuff up. Yeah, I said some things probably for the show for a little theatrical purpose.
Like what? I feel like you can't just leave that there.
I said example. Americans are pretty dumb and, which is true.
No, 100%. Yeah. I mean, look at us.
Yes, exactly.
Standing examples.
Exactly. We are, yes, we are mind-numbing examples. But also, I said, you know, television ratings, the system sucks. It's awful. Yeah, you measure 40,000 homes in a country of 375 million people. Okay? Not enough. Not good enough. I'm sorry if you accept that. I don't. I don't care about statistical random bell theories. I don't want to go to Novak or whatever it is for a statistics class, CK. Anyway, my guy Ben Conti at Fat Poet 10, Midnight Run. Listen to the Sideline Junkies. Watch the Sideline Junkies. They had me on last week. And good guys, Gentleman Jack and everybody in between. My guy Ross is occasionally on there and what everybody, right? So he says, at WrestleMania 621 is a content creator's dream. My guy really hates television ratings. Called Americans dumb. Now the Canadian radio diva wants a bus ride to Regina. After hearing that, all I can hear is LL Cool J and going back to Cali. Rooster is going back to Regina. I didn't say I said I would take a bus trip to Manitoba in June for the Stanley Cup Finals. If that's the way I could get there, and if the Caps are playing the Canadian, the Jets, I will be there.
On cue as a dumb American, never heard of Regina.
Regina is, I believe, in Saskatchewan. I believe.
In make-believe land right next to Neverland? Was that?
You have to double check if Regina is in Saskatchewan. But, and I said, because I didn't think about it at the time, if that is true, I said, I want to go to Saskatchewan, not Regina. Well, if I'm right about Regina being in Saskatchewan, I just said the same thing. I'm an idiot. What do you want from me? I didn't say I was the smartest guy in the world. I didn't say I was the sharpest tool in the shed. I just feel the way I feel. I have opinions, and my takes don't suck, and I don't usually use the word take because that's stupid. Anyway. And then Chief of DC, Bust My Chops, is like, just heard the rooster, but he said the roster, is going to stick it to Regina with all he has. Oh, man. I'm telling you. You guys, when I'm gone, you guys will just miss the bleep out of me. Your world is enriched by having me around. The entertainment that I provide, both on the radio and off, you guys will miss me. Or maybe you won't. Maybe you won't. Longfellow Tidwad also weighed in, something different. He said, join the youngest in charge with Toby Altizer on draft night starting at 8 p.m., by the way, on the Team 980. It's big couple of nights here. We've got the Mets, the Nats and the Orioles tonight. We got the draft show tomorrow night starting at 8 after a bonus hour of Craig until 1 a.m. And then you got the Nats and the Mets on Friday night as well. Join Toby Altizer on draft night starting at 8. WrestleMania 61 will join us live when the New York teams draft. What do you think? Should I go on the clock at number 3? And number 7? What do you think?
Depends who you think you're going to take.
Well, we'll talk about that next hour.
Ooh,
on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. Let's do a trending alert, and then we'll get out to your calls right here on the Team 980 and said Odyssey app, where we're always live and free. Yeah, as we mentioned, the Nationals with a big 7-0 win last night over those Orioles who continue to slide and struggle. And game 2 of that set coming up tonight. 6:45 first pitch, 6:15 the coverage, right here on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. Meanwhile, games going on right now, as there always is. Bunch of Wednesday afternoon baseball. Miami doubling up Cincinnati 2-1. Yankees with a 2-0 lead over the Guardians. Philadelphia and the Mets top 2, 0-0 there. San Diego trailing Detroit 1-0. Game 2 of the Eastern Conference quarterfinals is yours tonight. Capital One Arena, Caps with a 1-0 series lead, a 3-2 overtime win on Monday. Of course, you know Alex Ovechkin, first ever Stanley Cup playoff game-winning goal in overtime. Tonight, Logan Thompson once again expected to be in the net, and it looks like, according to Joe Beninati, that Alex Alexiev is expected to play with a full face mask and shield after taking a stick to the chops on Monday night. Last night in the NBA playoffs, it was the Los Angeles Lakers going at it in Game 2 of their series at home. They had the big lead in the first half, had to hang on for dear life and win 94-85 over the Timberwolves. Thunder easily disposing of Memphis. Indiana over Milwaukee to take a 2-0 series lead in that one. And that's what's trending.
So that's the problem with the Knicks. And that's the problem with the Phoenix Suns. And that's the problem with Chris Russell. He don't want to listen.
I always want to listen. Little Wagon Wheel, the Darius Rucker instrumental version. Old Crow Medicine Show first on it. Actually, there was somebody else before Old Crow Medicine Show, I think. Bob Dylan? I want to say. I can't remember. Anyway, welcome back. Yes, I was guilty of forgetting I had to do a radio show because somebody brought in just a huge, massive vat of wings that are monstrous, AMAC. And they brought in all sorts of food, of course, for the 106.7 guys. So we just all kind of like, I smelled it. I saw them all eating and going in and out of the control room. You just know, we're like vultures around here. Just vultures. And then I didn't even have one, and yet I got accused of by J.P. Finley and by others of having wings. I didn't even have one. I did not even eat one.
If you're going to get accused of it, I feel like you should at least take 10.
Exactly. I'm going to go do that now.
Yeah.
Do you mind if you want to just do the segment and then I mean, I want you to go eat. You're a young viral buck. Go and eat while I do whatever I've got to do over here. 301-230-0980. Let's get out to the phones for the first time this afternoon and get you guys aboard here. And let's go to our guy, Chris in Damascus, who I know is always fired up when we're talking Nats baseball here on the Team 980. And the Nats and the Orioles again on the Team 980 tonight, 6:15, the pregame coverage. First pitch right at 6:45. Hello, Chris. How are you?
I'm fine, sir. How are you today?
I am doing well, thank you. It's a beautiful day in the nation's capital, and we got a lot going on.
Oh, my. I know, and I'm going to let you get the Caps, but I just first wanted to call and thank you for all the Nats talk. I keep wanting to do that, and I've been listening. Yep. I haven't been calling as much, but I've been listening. But anyway, so appreciate that very much.
Appreciate it.
But I got a baseball question and then the Caps question, but the baseball, it's not really a question necessarily, but I believe, you know, their biggest problem has been their bullpen. But I can't remember who was the big, tall, right-handed reliever they had. He was like 6'10", pitched for a few years here.
Oh,
anyway.
Was it Roush?
Roush. Yeah, yeah.
John Roush. Was it John?
He was about 6'10". Yeah. Anyway, the reason I'm leading up to that is because I see what they're. They're fresh in there. Lucas Sims hasn't done anything, but and they do need a lefty, and I'm hoping Posse Davey took him right out last night, even though they were
You got to throw strikes, for God's sakes. You got a 7-run lead. They got one in all night, and you're coming in and walking. You guys get lost.
And Davey took him right out. Yeah. Thank you, Davey. Thank you, Doolittle. Thank you. Right. So hopefully Cole Henry. And the reason I asked about John Roush was because of Jackson Rutledge. He had struggled. Now, I know he's young, and he's about 6'8", though. And I'm hoping he transitions. He's done better this year in a relief because they haven't used him as a starter. They've used Brad Lord. And I'm hoping if he transitions, and that'll give you 4 relievers. I'm worried about the bullpen, but that's hope there. But their offense is just here. Like I said at the beginning of the season, I don't blame the team for not spending a lot of money on a lot of things because we need Dylan Cruz and James Wood and Jacob Young and all those guys to prove it before we go out, and we got till the trade deadline. If we can stay at 500 and then at the trade deadline, then let Rizzo cook like we're going to let Peters cook. And that's my feeling. That's not a question. All right, now to the Caps, because I know that's hot on you. And here's my question. That game disturbed me, and I'm like, oh, my God, they tied it up. Mm-hmm. How did they go 50 minutes in control, yeah. And then the last time they got, I mean, I puckered, and I cannot, and I'm not as emotional, I'm certain, about it as you are. Mm-hmm. But then they came back, and then Ovi just came. That was really, they seemed to step it back up. I hope they do, and best of luck to them. But that was something I didn't necessarily have a Caps question. But anyway, thank you for the nice talk. And don't hate on the Orioles either, because they were all I had for 35 years.
I'm not an Orioles hater by any means. I like to tease my guy, the Birdman, and whatever Orioles fans are out there, but I hear you. Thank you, Chris, as always. Appreciate you and appreciate the kind words. I will just say this. Yeah, about the Caps, we talked a lot of game one yesterday. Of course, we will do some more tonight or today. I think what happened is Montreal, A, desperate. They got their sea legs under them. They are talented top line. They've been kicking ass since the Four Nations break. Caulfield, Suzuki, we talked about that a lot before the series and yesterday. And on the first goal, it was a bad break. And on the second goal, they couldn't clear the puck. And it was just bombs away like a blizzard right in front of the net. And Logan Thompson got out of position, trying to make a save and got out of position. So there you have that. As far as the Nationals go again, listen, we all know it's still a work in progress. We all know, we said this all offseason, regardless of how much money they spent, didn't spend, whatever, and everybody's got a different definition of it, and, well, they, you know, this, that, and the other thing. It's over, Charlie, at this point. But what isn't over is what Chris mentioned, and that's the trade deadline. And if you can be within a couple of games of the wild card, there's a much greater chance that they add. It doesn't mean that they absolutely will. It doesn't mean that they won't subtract. But there's a greater chance that you can add. The key is, again, if you can somehow be in the wild card picture, of course. But the key will be to be within a game or two of the final wild card spot so that you give people a chance to believe instead of pairing off Hunter Henry and whoever else they traded at the near the deadline last year and then not trading Kyle Finnegan. You know, that's the key. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Let's get to Jonesy. Next up, what's up, Jonesy? How are you?
Hey, Rooster, what's going on, man?
What's up, Jonesy?
Entertaining dude on the air. Look, hey, listen. My Nationals, they're kind of on the up and down side, but they are surprising me. They're taking a lot of these 2 out of 3s. I don't know, man. I got mixed emotions on it, but I love that 7-to-donut victory last night with the Orioles. Sorry, bro, man. I hope you get enough. With that being said, Dave Martinez, that dude makes some good decisions on the fly side, man. I think he's underrated and he doesn't get enough credit. I mean, but when he does bad, a lot of people pile on. But when he does something good, you hear nothing about it, and it's undersold. And I think the man needs to get credit when he does something good, like pulling a dude when he's on the struggle mode. Now, moving on to the Caps. Tonight, I have big-time concerns under the circumstances. We gave those jokers leaving the ice the other night a little bit of confidence. So Montreal's coming out there for the get-back tonight. So we need to be aware of that, stay up there on the second line. Got to get better. But I'm just hoping for the best, man. And I just be TV watching, either on a respirator or sitting back eating popcorn. You know, in relaxed mode.
Whichever,
you'll find out by tomorrow when I talk to you.
Attaboy. I would do a little something different than popcorn, but, you know, popcorn with lots of butter and salt is a good thing. It's a good treat.
Well, it is. I hear you.
Talk about it. Enjoy the night, brother. Hope you that too. The TV surfing goes well, and I hope that we have some happy outcomes in the end. Thank you. Appreciate that. Let's get to Mitch in Jersey here on the Team 980. Hello, Mitch. How are you?
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Mitch?
How's it going, Chris?
What's up? How are you?
Yeah. How you doing? All I got to say is the division in the National League is getting really tougher. We got a good set of young players. You talk about Dylan Cruz. What are you going to buy? Maybe a possible run for MVP and James Wood. He's off to a good start.
He's off to a great start. Yeah. He's off to a great start. He does everything so far really well, except maybe hit for average, but that'll come. When you drive the ball with authority to the opposite field as many times as he does, when you hit left-handers for the most part the way he has with power and the opposite field and driving the ball, the average will come. And again, average isn't as important in today's Major League Baseball as it used to be. I mean, I think it should be, but it's not as important. So the bottom line is it matters what you then do in your other opportunities. And again, he smokes balls. He doesn't hit balls lightly when he makes contact. He smokes and drives balls.
He's going to be something. He's the left-handed version of Aaron Judge. And I hope we can keep these three guys long-term, sign them. Let's let them go like we did with Harper. Well, Rendon was a blessing.
It would be nice. The learners or whoever owns the team, I appreciate it, Mitch, whoever owns the team at the time, got to spend some money. You know, you took care of Keibert Ruiz, right? Again, there's two to tango. Not every player wants to sign early, long-term. I got it. But that doesn't mean you don't keep trying. It doesn't mean that you go, oh, they're represented by Scott Boras. We'll see you in 4 years at the bargaining table. No, you keep trying. But you don't go under market, underhanded deals. You do fair deals. You give them a reason to sign. Not a reason to have a little bit of distrust. And unfortunately, the learners, because they think everybody should bow down to them business tactic-wise, haven't done things equitably and fairly in a lot of negotiations. And that has come out. That has shown true. Do it better. And maybe you'll get some of these guys inked long-term. 301-230-0980, 49 minutes after the hour, 11 in front of the top. We'll get to my guy AP next, who I got to meet on Monday night, and it was a joy. We'll tell you that story next on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. All right, wrapping up a busy hour number one. We got some Wizards news to give you just after the top of the hour, but I want to go out to my guy, AP, who I got to meet on Monday. AP, I'm gonna take you off your normal path, right? Off of the normal bit, and just say, my man, it was great to finally meet you. You're a diehard Caps fan. You're a good man. You've served this country and are still serving for a long time, and it was, and the pleasure was sincerely all mine.
Hey, Chris, I really appreciate that. It was definitely a pleasure meeting you. I know I looked a little tipsy that night.
That's all right, brother. You look like you're having a good time. That's okay. That's all
man,
right.
Look.
But, man, I let me tell you, I always knew you were a big Caps fan. Like, you probably, like, helped Ted Leonsis with his renovation project. Man, you had a lot of gear and material the other night.
Oh, yeah. I had to get a jersey for my son,
yeah.
You know, especially, like, this will be his first jersey. I've been meaning to take him to a hockey game. I just know he's not going to sit still
right.
for me.
No, I know. Did you put it on him? Did you put it on him yet or no?
I'll pick him up Thursday.
Okay.
So I'm definitely going to have it in the car when I get him.
All right. Make sure you send me a picture. Make sure you send me a picture.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It would be a little oversized for him, but you know,
right.
I thought I'd just buy it big. Let him grow into it.
That's
perfect. As far as our game tonight, you know, especially when I was under the influence, it was very hard to follow the game, especially without our guy Smoker Nile and Joe Beninati and our guy, you know, Locker calling the game and keeping me informed and everything like that. I mean, obviously, you know, you knew when certain calls would happen, like an icing or a penalty of some kind. But for the most part, it was very hard to follow the game. But I was just excited to be there and just, you know, it was a great time. You know, surrounded by good fans. And, you know, hopefully we can, you know, get a win tonight.
Well,
you know, I'll be at home tuning in so I could be more focused.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I mean, you know this, right? I mean, because you've been to a bunch of these games, so you know what it's like. If they
– Oh, yeah.
Look, they played a pretty good first 50 minutes of the game. 50, not 15.
Oh, yeah.
They played a great first 8-9 minutes of the game. They were hitting everything in sight. That
mm-hmm.
set the tempo.
Yes,
Spencer Carberry said after the game on Monday night that was the best first period they had played in months. So
mm-hmm.
they need to do that tonight, but they need to be able to – A, finish some things that they didn't quite finish, and sometimes that's not your fault. Connor McMichael was was stoned a couple of times, not stoned in a 420 sort of way, stoned meaning by the goaltender, a couple of times early on in that game. If they finish one or two of those opportunities, then we're not worried about blowing or giving up a two-goal lead in the back half of the third period, you know? And that's easier said than done, but if that's what they do, if they finish more, one, two, if they can somehow sustain the physicality, because you
mm-hmm.
know Montreal is not going to be as kind of like in awe, if you will, of the setting and all of that as maybe they were early on Monday night.
Yeah, I'll definitely say, I mean, in the beginning of the game, you know, I did notice, like, we took about the horns and we enforced our will on them. But then later on in the game, as my liquor high subsided, I noticed we took our foot off the gas a little bit and, you know, we kind of got a little complacent. You know, they had a lot of zone time in front of our net.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, you know, if you don't clear that puck,
yeah.
You know, and you don't keep the crease clean, that's what you're going to get. But, again, I hope we, you know, enforce our will tonight and play all three complete periods and get the win and go back to Montreal 2-0.
Attaboy. Great to meet you, brother. Appreciate the all the love and all that stuff. Enjoy the game tonight. That's my guy, AP, in Fort Meade, serving our country and doing it for a long time. Hour number two, straight ahead, right here on the Team 980. One recent mock draft, I guess one final mock draft, has a guy that I'm very interested in drafting at 29. I'll tell you who and what and where. Next on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.